The man smiled. We could help you out with that, you know. It should be pretty wild.
Just right in here, Wade said. He glanced in the side-view mirror as he opened the door. He saw his own reflection, but not the woman's. Wade opened the door and reached inside. Take your time, the blonde told him. She looked back to her companion, hoping to catch his eye. Wade grunted as he reached inside the glove compartment. The blonde stood close to him. Wade fumbled around, saying only, Fresh pack, let me tear off the plastic. The tearing sound seemed a touch off-base to Natalia. She had just managed a wink in Lucian's direction before she caught the red glow of the emergency road flare. Natalia's supernatural speed couldn't compensate for her complete surprise. Wade caught her in the side of the neck rather than the head as he'd hoped, but he immediately saw her flesh catch fire. Drew tackled Lucian without hesitation. The stocky vampire staggered back but didn't fall. He quickly snatched up a gun from inside his sport coat. Drew grabbed at his wrist while Jason rushed in to help. Taylor glanced around, looking for something to do. The blonde screamed as her hair caught fire. Her neck continued to burn, too. She battered Wade back, slamming him up against the side of his pickup. He caught hold of one of her arms and jabbed the road flare at her stomach. Taylor opted to help the others as Jason was knocked to the ground. Drew kept struggling with the man's gun hand. Taylor came around their opponent's side, swinging a wide kick at the back of his leg. Most of his weight was on it as she hit him right behind the knee. He fell back with Drew on top of him. Drew struggled to keep that gun-wielding hand down while throwing his knee into Lucian's groin, but such attacks meant little to the undead. Lucian managed a single back-fisted blow at Drew with his free hand. It hit like a baseball bat. Even despite a poor windup and little leverage, Drew tumbled away. Natalia flailed at Wade to knock him down, then battered wildly at the flames over her upper body in a vain attempt to put them out. Wade fell to the ground. His road flare fell from his hands. It had already broken in half and scattered across the pavement anyway. He looked up to see the raging, burning woman about to lunge at him. Then, Jason was there, grabbing Natalia by the waist of her pants. He pulled hard, twisting her around to hurl her at Lucian, while the other vampire rose with his gun in hand. Taylor saw it coming and shoved Lucian toward the oncoming flames. He tumbled to the ground with Natalia on top of him, while Taylor scrambled out of the way. Natalia was already beyond rational thought. She grabbed at Lucian, trying to get help from something, anything able to put out the flames. Lucian was badly burned before he managed to fight her off of him in a panic. But by then, Drew was up. His foot came down brutally on the side of Lucian's knee with a cringe-inducing crunch. Natalia tumbled away. Her dead flesh continued to burn, but there was nothing left in her throat to sound out her agony. Lucian could heal his broken joints, but his burns wouldn't clear so quickly. Drew kept up the pressure, throwing blow after blow down on the vampire to keep him off balance. Lucian's undead strength was somewhat drained by his burns, but finally he managed to catch Drew's wrist and twist it painfully, then kick him away with shocking force. The vampire got to his feet, just in time for Taylor's car to slam into him. Taylor struck him dead on from behind, sending him tumbling face down to the ground again. She hit the brakes reflexively, but then let her car roll forward until she felt her front left tire roll up on top of him. Rather than roll the rest of the way over, she threw the parking brake. Drew got to his feet, clutching his side and huffing painfully. He looked over at the vampire pinned face down under Taylor's front wheel. Then he saw Jason with the vampire's pistol in his hands.
You okay?
Drew huffed. Yeah, you?
Yeah, where's Wade?
As if in answer, Wade passed between the two, pulling back the slide on the pistol he had retrieved from his truck. There was a tire iron tucked into his belt.
I'm fine.
Gonna hold up a gas station is all, he growled. Watch that asshole under the car.
Drew glanced down to see Lucian pushing up against the wheel of the car. The tire rested right below his shoulder blades and thus allowed little leverage from his arms, but he tried to brace his legs for a mighty heave. Drew kicked the vampire's feet backward, causing him to slip, and then grunt in pain as the car settled back down upon him again. Jason watched Wade with no small amount of nervousness playing in his face.
You think he's really gonna...
Wade smashed the glass of the mini-mart door with the tire iron. He reached inside, threw the latch on the door, and entered.
Drop the phone, asshole!
They heard him roar.
Get out here, right fucking now! Where's the camera feed go? I said the camera feed! For the security cameras, you fuckwit!
Jesus, Drew murmured.
Yeah, I know, Jason breathed. I'm way uncomfortable with this.
They heard the door of Taylor's car slam shut. She stepped over to join them, saying only,
My vote is we waterboard this motherfucker with a gas pump until he tells us everything.
Has she told you she loves you?
Alex kept his mouth shut. He stared at the ceiling. He hated himself for the way his body reacted to the lithe, sensuous woman laying on him, speaking in such an adoring, yet venomous voice. He wanted to look at Lorelai, but he couldn't meet her eyes while this woman had him so mortifyingly aroused. He was grateful he was still dressed, and terrified at the thought that he probably wouldn't be so for much longer. Lydia rose to straddle his hips. She slowly rocked back and forth on her knees.
I imagine she lets you feel like you're in charge. Lets you feel like a big, strong, masterful man. Does she call you master? Does it help you feel like you're in charge? Like you can trust her?
Alex remained silent. Lydia grabbed at his hair, turning him to one side to lick the side of his neck, much as Rachel had greeted him hours before, only without any of the warmth.
Why won't you talk to me? She cooed in his ear. Don't you have anything to say at all?
Nothing you won't just use against me, he grunted.
Oh, sweet Alex, Lydia cooed. I thought you'd be used to that already. Admit it. You love being dominated by a succubus. Lorelai has you wrapped around her finger. Don't you know that? Haven't you already seen? She plays you like an instrument, and you only want her to play more and more.
Her face loomed over his, split by an animalistic grin.
Doesn't it get you off? You have no worries. You can just lay there and let her take care of everything.
Her hands slipped under his shirt. They were soft, tantalizing. His mind and body fought over whether her touch excited him or if it made his skin crawl.
You know, I'm gonna give you more than she has, right?
Lydia asked, still swaying against his body.
Lorelai is held back on you, Alex. I can tell. I won't hold back at all.
You mean you're going to kill me? He sneered.
I mean I will give you pleasures any man would die for. Lydia smiled. Don't worry about Lorelai. She'll get to share. Believe me, I want her to feel every moment of you and I together, right to the very last. I'm nothing if not generous.
You're a wretch.
Lydia let out a delighted squeal.
He fights! Oh, how he fights! It's nice to be called something other than a whore for once.
Why would I insult whores like that?
The succubus laughed. She lowered her breasts against Alex's chin as she writhed on top of him.
Lorelai, you've taught him well, Lydia taunted.
Then she looked back down at Alex, who would have bitten her if he wasn't sure it would just be another thing to mock him about.
Don't try to goad me into ending your life quickly, Alex, she said. I won't have it. You will leave this world with my name falling gratefully from your lips. She sounded so sure of it. He was chained here, and so was Lorelei. There was nothing either of them could do. Alex tried not to despair, but he knew she was right. He probably couldn't hold out against this. Revolted as he was by Lydia and the situation, chances were that she'd probably just drive him out of his mind before long. Maybe with drugs, maybe with sleep deprivation. Though he resolved not to give in to Lydia, he just couldn't see a way out. Her tongue curled around his ear. Alex turned his face away, roughly trying to bump her head aside in some small show of contempt and resistance. But Lydia just smiled at that, too. She smiled at everything.
Where's Rachel?
He finally asked in a hushed voice. Lydia raised her head again, looking down at him with an arched eyebrow.
Ah, yes, your foul-mouthed angel friend. She gave me quite the talking to, Lydia chuckled. Almost had me crying and cowering in a corner.
Lydia looked here and there in the room, making a show of gazing over her shoulder. Then she laid back down against him.
Stefan told Warren that their lost brother summoned an angel as well as Lorelei, she whispered. He thought I couldn't hear, or maybe thought I couldn't understand the language. Turns out, I've gotten around over the centuries. Clearly he hopes to try all this for himself. Silly mortal. Anyway, don't worry about Rachel interrupting us, Alex, Lydia smiled. She's already dead.
We ain't fucking torturing nobody, Wade said firmly.
Then how do we get this guy to talk? Taylor asked, waving at the vampire still pinned under her car.
You don't,
Lucian grunted. He tried again to gain leverage. Again, Drew kicked the legs out from under him. Lucian growled in pain as the car once more settled down on his back.
You just die in agony. Your families die in agony. You spend all your last moments on this earth begging for death. Bitch, you gonna spend your last moments on this earth with that mouth duct tape shut if you don't shut the fuck up, Drew warned him. Look, torture only works on television and in the wet dreams of chair-borne rangers, Wade scowled. All you get is whatever sort of confession's gonna stop the pain. Maybe y'all get the guy to talk, but that don't make what he says accurate.
Lucian let out a bitter laugh. His eyes darted between the group. The only one who was not part of the conversation was Jason, who busily looked through the SUV. Off to the side, the gas station attendant sat on the curb, bound with duct tape. Drew and Jason had less sympathy for the guy when they found out he hadn't been calling 911.
I don't suppose your people in that mansion up the road would be open to a prisoner swap instead? Taylor asked. You for Alex and Lorelei?
They might, Lucian ventured, if you move quickly.
Well, there's that, at least, Taylor said, looking back to Wade. Obviously, they'd just try to kill all of us, rather than doing a prisoner swap, so we'd be stupid to try. But that at least confirms they've got Alex and Lorelei. Lucian growled in frustration. The girl was clever.
The lady will be good to her word. She is always good to her word. Approach under a flag of truce, and it will be honored.
Jason came back carefully holding a large submachine gun. It bore all sorts of accessories, from a flash suppressor to a folding stock.
They've got a couple other guns back there, too, Jason noted as he offered the weapon to Wade, who took it with interest.
Yeah, prisoner swaps ain't happening, Wade decided. Your people are likely to just figure they're all way too tricksy for us simple mortal folk, and they'll just do something shady to screw us.
He pulled the magazine out of the weapon with some familiarity. He wasn't an expert with this particular piece, but he at least knew the basics. The odd red rings around the tips of the bullets made his eyebrows rise.
"What's up with these bullets?" Wade asked.
Lucian only scowled.
"All right, y'all ain't gonna talk."
Wade reloaded the gun, slung it over his shoulder, and then went to his pickup. He pulled the spare gas canister out of the back and walked in the direction of the gas pumps.
"Do you think this bit of theater frightens me?"
Lucian snapped.
"I tortured warriors twice your size back when this land bore only savages. I've seen all these games before. You don't have it in you, and neither do your friends."
"Yeah?" the young veteran asked. "So after all that experience, tell me this. How long you reckon it takes for a guy to learn that some folks just need killing?" Lucian's aggressive demeanor lessened as Wade kept moving. For the first moment in all of this, the vampire seemed a touch unnerved.
"Man, we can't just light him on fire," Drew protested.
"You better start talking," Jason told the vampire, in what was half a warning and half a plea. Taylor just watched, crossing her arms uncomfortably across her chest as Wade started filling the container.
"Wade?" Drew said. "You serious about this?"
"Folks, this dude is running around armed and dangerous, answering to no law or authority we know.
I bet y'all ain't even an American citizen. Am I right?"
Wade asked, looking at Lucian pointedly as he brought the gas canister over.
"Yeah, figured as much. So he's answering to some boss who ain't no legal power, running around in my country with illegal military weapons, kidnapping, and assaulting my fellow citizens. Y'all get what I'm saying here? I'm good and pissed about Alex and Lorelai, but it ain't just about my friends now."
"You're saying he's a terrorist?" Taylor blinked.
"Maybe not by definition, but it's the same sort of problem," Wade nodded.
"We're looking at a dude who makes war on our country without being a part of any nation. He ain't gonna accept nothing short of total dominance, and he'll obviously kill anyone who gets in his way. He ain't gonna back down, and we can't put him on trial."
Wade set the gas canister down on the ground next to him. He threw the safety on the submachine gun. Lucian fumed.
"You still won't get into that mansion to save your friends if you kill me. No mortal can cross that threshold tonight."
Wade cocked his head curiously.
"Now why's that?"
"The home is mystically warded. As I say, no mortal can cross the threshold uninvited, or any of its other portals. Unless you've some way of walking through walls, you'd best reconsider a prisoner exchange."
"How do we know that the people we want are still alive?" Taylor asked.
"They are both to be kept alive for the purposes of other bargains,"
Lucian admitted.
"Not as party favors for you to munch on?" Drew pressed. "No, certainly not the demon. Your friend is being kept away from the festivities in part to prevent just such a waste. He's in the basement, safe from accidental harm."
"Good to know," Wade nodded.
He put a 3-round burst from the submachine gun into the vampire.
"What the fuck?"
Drew burst.
"Whoa!"
Jason protested. Taylor looked on in shock. Lucian quickly crumbled to ash. Soon only clothes and ashes remained under Taylor's car.
"Yep, that's what I figured," Wade said. "Some sort of anti-vampire bullets."
"We didn't agree to killing him,"
Drew shouted, shoving Wade back.
"I know,"
Wade nodded. He set the gun on the ground and put his hands up.
"I know we didn't want to just kill him. I'm not big on that sort of shit myself, and I never let it happen like that in the army. But I ain't in the army now, Drew.
We ain't got no backup, and we got no place to put a captured vampire who just said 2 minutes ago he was gonna kill all of us and all our families. You think he didn't mean that?
Taylor just stared at the remains. I feel like I'm supposed to be sick, she thought aloud.
You probably would be if and y'all were looking at a real dead body, but that ain't. That's some monster that should have been killed a long time ago.
In cold blood? Jason shot back, while he's helpless?
I know, Wade admitted. I know that, but I didn't see no other option.
If and y'all never talk to me again, I'm gonna be sad, but I understand. But right now, we ain't got no other options. They got our friends, and they're gonna come after us unless we do something about it.
Well, what the fuck do you suggest? Drew snapped. Our only source of information's dead now. And we don't even know if what he said is true.
We don't, but we gotta go with it.
Wade shrugged.
I got an idea. Need y'all to help, though. I'm sorry, Drew, I'm sorry for all of this. I'm probably gonna be sorry for the rest of my life, and if I saw another option, I would have taken it. But our boy's in trouble, and we're his only shot right now, right? Y'all wanna whip my ass, you're the guy to do it. And it ain't like I don't have it coming for this. But let's go get our friends first, all right?
Drew looked at him for a long, hard moment.
You got a plan?
I got half a plan, Wade nodded. The rest we gotta make up as we go. And I gotta say, we're probably just all gonna get killed.
He already took a bullet for me, Taylor said. I won't just let him go. Jason shrugged.
I was gonna bomb my midterms anyway.
He was maddeningly aroused, and he hated himself for it. Lorelai shared it all. It was as real to her as if Lydia teased Lorelai directly, but in addition to her own feelings of disgust, she felt it from Alex, too. The blonde succubus manipulated her lover's body like the expert she was, and they were both still clothed. It would inevitably be worse in time. His desire for Rachel had been replaced with the sort of longing that accompanies mourning. The angel surely would have arrived by now if she were able. Lorelai couldn't be certain, but it seemed likely that Rachel was dead. It was curious, though, that Stefan edited Rachel out of his recitation of Alex's memories. Perhaps he didn't actually know what had happened to her, and he didn't want to give Alex cause to have hope. It was dangerous to allow captives to feel hope. They heard keys at the door. The locks were thrown open. Lydia stopped writhing over Alex in her torturous foreplay, to look up over her shoulder. Most of the previous group re-entered, without Anastasia, but with different vampires instead. One was in a pinstriped suit, the other wore a trench coat and a longsword strapped to his back.
"Spent this time in a spirit journey to the outskirts of the lands of the dead,"
Warren carried on as the group entered.
"The River Leave must be passed by all souls on their way to the afterlife. The Greeks knew it as a place where memories of life would be shed, so that the soul might continue on to the afterlife, unencumbered by sorrow, or vengeance, or loss."
"I know the mythology," Blackthorn scowled. "You needn't be pedantic. The point?"
Warren bowed stiffly.
"Symbolism, Lord Blackthorn. As you no doubt know, magic relies heavily on symbolism. Leave is symbolic of the forgotten memories of the dead. To the living, however, it may often mean quite the opposite. A small dose of this potion will bring great clarity to Carlyle's memories. It will take a short while for the effects to settle, though. And there are the festivities upstairs to attend. Are you sure you do not want to wait until there is more to hear?"
"We are a patient people," Blackthorn said. He turned to Stefan. "This issue creates a wrinkle in our hopes for a greater spirit of community, Lord Stefan. We would hate to have it grow into something worse."
"Our arrangement with Lord Ball has nothing to do with Lady Anastasia's holdings,
nor any of the agreements we have negotiated. Stefan replied, I see no justification for interference.
Interference? No. Observation, sir, Blackthorn countered. This sorcery is to take place in my home, while hosting an event at the lady's invitation and under her jurisdiction.
Jurisdiction? Stefan scowled, showing a small degree of open tension for the first time. Need I remind you, sir, that no agreement has yet been formalized between the Brotherhood and the lady?
Trouble in paradise.
Lydia smiled over her shoulder at Ball. The demon moved over to Lorelei, who turned away from him in disgust.
Nothing to concern my slaves or I,
he said. Then he smiled at Lorelei.
Yes, slaves. You'll be mine once again, as soon as Lydia dispatches your little boyfriend here. But I see no reason to rush her.
Again, Lord Stefan, Blackthorn said darkly, this is still my home. You remain here at the lady's invitation. We will allow your work to continue out of deference to Lord Ball and Lydia, but do not presume too much.
Gentlemen, Lord Ball sighed, this grows tiresome.
Stefan and Blackthorn stared at one another. Warren and the other vampires stayed silent, but their presence was felt. Stefan quite clearly understood the superior numbers around him. Despite his magic, numbers mattered.
Warren, Stefan said finally, please proceed.
The robed sorcerer stepped around to the head of the large table. Lydia remained on top of Alex, upright but still straddling him.
If the lady would be so kind,
Warren gestured, offering a hand down from the table.
I think I like it here,
Lydia protested mischievously.
Is it essential that I move?
I can perform my work either way,
said Warren,
but I would hate to disturb you.
I'm already disturbed. Please make it worth my while.
He bowed again. Warren drew from the folds of his robe a funnel and a large flask.
I will need someone to hold his head steady,
he said. Mitchell, Blackthorn beckoned immediately. Without hesitation, the vampire in the black clothes so reminiscent of the Old West strode to the end of the table. He grabbed Alex's head and held it firm against the tabletop.
Thank you,
Warren said.
Would someone else be so kind as to open his mouth?
Talon,
Blackthorn said. A moment later, Talon appeared at the table opposite from Warren. He grabbed at Alex's jaw and forced it open after a bit of a struggle. Lorelei pulled fiercely against her chains. The force of her efforts created a loud racket. Lord Ball looked on with some amusement as she pulled, even to the point of obvious injury to her hands, as the cuffs around her wrists refused to give.
Love hurts, doesn't it, dear Lorelei?
He taunted. The succubus yanked again on the chains. Neither the links nor the hook in the floor would give, but she kept trying. Finally, Blackthorn said,
Spade, Jack, would you be so kind?
The unoccupied vampires pummeled Lorelei to the floor with supernatural strength and a complete lack of mercy. Warren put the funnel partly into Alex's mouth and popped the lid on his flask. He poured in a small amount of the liquid, murmuring words in Greek. Alex coughed and sputtered as best he could, but the hands on his head made it impossible to do anything more. Eventually, he swallowed out of panicked reflex. His body shuddered. Warren pulled his flask back, watching and waiting. The room fell silent as Lorelei's tormentors let up in their work. Alex let out a stifled whimper of pain.
Does it hurt him?
Lydia asked.
Physically, no,
Warren explained.
Not at all. However, the River Leith takes sorrow and pain from the dead. To expose the living to the waters brings the opposite effect. The memories that come back first and clearest are always the most painful. Trauma is relived. Loss occurs all over again. We cannot examine his memories until the psychological turmoil settles, lest Lord Stefan be subject to his pain.
Lydia smiled broadly. How dreadful, she mused. Without warning, she snatched the flask from Warren's hands and overturned it into the funnel.
Not so much,
Warren blurted out, reaching for the flask only to have his hands slapped away by the demon. None of the vampires moved to stop her. Once more, Alex did what he could to spit out the potion, but the fingers that clamped down immediately on his nose blocked any ability to breathe. He couldn't cough out the liquid without any air in his lungs. Lydia withdrew the funnel and empty flask from his mouth, handing both back to Warren.
There you go, she said sweetly.
Alex coughed, gasped, and then fell silent. Tears that had fallen from his eyes in the midst of choking continued to flow. Soon his body shook as he openly wept. There was no holding back his tears. He hardly seemed aware of his surroundings anymore. On the floor, Lorelei shook with pain. Lifetimes of desire were mixed up in Alex's memories, almost all of it dominated by a sense of loss, or desperation, or betrayal. Alex thrashed on the table. Lydia chuckled, slipping off to let him strain against his bonds. His cries became tumultuous, body-racking sobs. Lydia cast a glance toward Ball.
Teenagers, she snickered.
So much drama.
She looked to Warren.
How long will this go on?
I am unsure,
Warren told her.
It will all depend on how much his mind must sort through. This seems a bit much for one so young, but there may be trauma in his personal history we did not expect.
Humph,
Lydia shrugged. She turned to Blackthorn.
I suppose, then, that while we wait, I might fulfill my obligations to your lady.
Blackthorn eyed the wailing prisoner.
That would be good of you, yes.
Master, Lydia asked, will you accompany us?
My time grows short,
he noted.
I will accompany you, but you, deal with her chains,
he said, gesturing to Spade and Jack, and then to Lorelei.
She comes with me.
Talon, Blackthorn blinked, Mitchell, would you be so kind as to remain here?
Sure,
the cowboy shrugged. Talon only nodded. They cast wary glances at the robed sorcerer, who stepped back an extra pace. As Lorelei's chains were unfastened from the floor, her handlers favored her with another kick to the stomach and another blow across the shoulders. She hardly felt them, though. Instead, she felt her young lover's desires. He helped her rise above her former self. She longed to surround him with luxuries and affection, and to enjoy him for the rest of his days. She had worked tirelessly to simply teach him to set aside his distant worries and learn to have a good time. As she was pulled away from Alex, Lorelei still felt his desires. It was all flavored with a tempest of desperation, denial, fear, and regret. She felt betrayal, loss, and loneliness. As Lorelei was dragged from Alex's side, she felt his strongest desire. More than anything else, the only man she ever loved wanted to die. Chapter 17. Don't Cry. He remembered walking to Opilio's house, feeling cheated, feeling bitter, just knowing that this would destroy any chance at building a decent life again. He'd been right, too. The abrupt end to his memories bore that out. It was the same feeling he'd had when the slavers clubbed him over the head. After this second blackout, though, nothing else followed. He remembered sitting in the recruiter's office in Detroit, giving his name, rank, and serial number, and requesting to go back into that stinking bush, trying all the while not to weep. The recruiter didn't even ask why. His tears didn't flow then, but they flowed now. He remembered Marie, in the rearview mirror of the truck as he returned to the front, back to where the second armored would go right back into the thick of it with the Germans. She waved, then hung her head and turned away. They exchanged letters right to the end, but that was the last he ever saw of her. He remembered all the awful, thoughtless, stupid things he said to Siobhan. He hadn't meant any of it, hadn't meant to say anything but I'm hurt and this is hard for me and I love you. The hurtful things came out of his mouth and crushed her feelings like so many slaps in her beautiful, wounded face. He remembered desperately wanting to take them all back, and he remembered the moment when he found out that it was too late. He remembered building Halla's funeral pyre and lighting it, the morning after he had spent all night cradling her bloodied body in his arms. He remembered dying alone and afraid, in a dirty street in a holy land that seemed less and less holy every day since he left home. He remembered all that and so much more, finding his wife slain by Shaka's warriors for failing to show proper grief for Nandi's passing, finding his wife bent over his dinner table by the very priest who had officiated the wedding, and her snarling demand that he leave her alone despite the flowers in his hand and the horror in his eyes, all that. And so much more. It was too much to bear alone.
I'm here. I'm gonna help you. You're not alone.
Molly?
Mr. Woods asked.
What are you doing?
Helping him,
Molly said. She knelt beside the pale, mostly naked man on the short couch. He was hardly conscious. Molly pulled from one of her many pockets a blue periwinkle leaf, crushed it in her hand, and rubbed it on his neck where the two puncture wounds were still somewhat bloody. She murmured words of healing and comfort.
No, I mean, why would you do that?
Woods pressed. Molly looked over her shoulder in something of a glare. Standing over her were Onyx, Mr. Woods, and a pair of heavy-set vampires in dresses that were the height of fashion back in the antebellum South. She ignored Woods.
He needs water,
she said to Onyx, who promptly stepped away to a table of refreshments nearby.
Oh, said one of the vampires in a sweet voice. Do you plan on reviving him? That's ever so kind of you. He's just delicious. I'd hate to think that I got the last bite of him all myself. He should be shared around more.
Shared? Molly blinked. He's wiped out. Even once I'm done with him, he's not up for more of this. He needs to go home.
Home? The vampire chuckled with her twin. Why, aren't you just the sweetest thing?
Onyx returned with a glass of water for the delirious young man. Mr. Woods laid a hand on Molly's shoulder.
Molly, he urged, we need to go. You've done what you can here.
I can get him to a car.
You can't, Woods said firmly.
Not unless you're willing to pay Lord Blackthorn for him,
the other of the undead ladies put in.
All these refreshments are his property, after all.
Molly's eyes flared. Onyx grabbed her arm and helped Mr. Woods pull her away.
You've been warned already,
Mr. Woods reminded her quietly.
Live and let live.
Like they're letting these drones live?
Molly hissed.
Would you be so tolerant of a guest in your home disrupting your lifestyle?
Woods asked.
This has gone on for centuries. You're not going to change anything.
This goes beyond lifestyle, Molly argued.
She kept her voice down.
Do you think all these people here walking around as hors d'oeuvres are knowing volunteers?
Some of them, yes. Mr. Woods nodded. But that's not for us to judge. Ladies, I know you are both new here, but how different do you think this is from how the Brotherhood handles its matters? The vampires are entertained by seeing you get upset, and they'll only seek more entertainment from that. They feed on human blood. We are here to make sure that it won't ever be our blood. Don't tell me you've gotten all this way in your studies without spilling a little blood yourselves.
Mr. Woods, Onyx broke in, her hand still on Molly's arm. Do you think you could give us a moment to talk this over? I think we're all just having a misunderstanding here. He nodded, looking at Onyx imploringly.
Of course,
he said. He stepped away. Most of the conversation took place through a single exchange of nuanced glares. Onyx sympathized with Molly, but wanted to keep her eye on the ball. Molly didn't want to blow their mission, but was of the opinion that everyone present needed to be annihilated, here and now, immediately and without delay. This was not the first expired blood toy the pair had seen tonight. It was just the first that they could get to and offer aid. Moreover, it wasn't the first time they had witnessed the indifference of the Brotherhood. Before the conversation continued, the entire atmosphere of the broad hall changed. Black-garbed partygoers parted graciously and bowed or knelt for a strange procession of individuals. At their front were Lord Blackthorn and Lady Anastasia, who had been described at length for Molly and Onyx by several gushing guests. They carried themselves like royalty. Behind them, though, no one else put on such airs. They were imposing enough, though. A man in a purple dress shirt with dark, smoky orbs instead of eyes, and a stunningly beautiful blonde in an elegant, slinky emerald dress. To Molly and Onyx's mystic vision, both of them had small black horns, just below the scalp, large demonic wings and long devil's tails. Those same features were shared by the chained, muzzled, bloodied woman dragged behind them by a pair of vampires. She wore a tattered black nightgown and a glare of overwhelming hatred for everything around her, and in particular for the demons she was forced to follow. Onyx's grip on Molly's arm tightened. Were it not for the aid of the spell of deception they both wove earlier, her expression would have surely betrayed her alarm. Instead, her face was merely grim. Lord Stefan, Mr. Woods asked as the group passed by. A moment. The well-dressed leader of the Brotherhood peeled off from the procession. A robed man who kept his face hidden behind a hood followed.
My time is short, Mr. Woods, Stefan warned in hushed tones. Still, it is good that you got my attention. We need to speak.
Oh?
How urgent is your business?
Not terribly, I suppose. I wanted to make you aware of a couple of new guests, if only to avoid a surprise. This is Molly and Onyx, whom we've been hoping to chat up for some time. Miss Black managed to convince them to come to the party.
Stefan showed a glint of recognition in his eyes, but his demeanor did not soften.
Ah, ladies, I sincerely apologize. While I have been eager to make your acquaintance and hopefully sway you into joining our organization, I fear tonight might not be the night for such negotiations. Mr. Woods, I trust you are seeing to their safe conduct.
Woods hesitated. His eyebrows rose at the loaded question.
I am. Good. I need you to let the others know that we may yet need to step back from our plans for alliance with the Society.
He looked to Molly and Onyx.
Ladies, again, I apologize, but I must speak with Mr. Woods alone. Would you be so kind?
His voice dripped with sincerity and polite tones. He even bowed slightly.
Of course, Onyx smiled.
She drew Molly away, but not before reaching up to subtly scratch her ear. One of her smaller metallic earrings, duller than the rest, slipped off and fell to the floor.
Suboscuto,
she murmured as they turned away. Molly glanced at her.
Risky much?
They're worried about the vampires, not us, Onyx whispered. Cover for me. Molly promptly launched into her case for adopting a cat. It was exactly the sort of thing that Onyx had learned to tune out.
We weren't able to handle things downstairs as subtly as we'd hoped,
Onyx heard Stefan say. The words came to her ear as if she were still part of the men's conversation.
The corpses have been all over us.
Unfortunate, but that was a gamble,
Woods shrugged.
They're not all stupid.
No, and Lydia still plays us off against one another. Ball will leave soon with the captured succubus. In the meantime, we have to make our move. Carlyle's knowledge is too valuable to share. There is more going on than we imagined.
How so?
Garrison appears to have succeeded beyond our wildest dreams,
Stefan hissed.
We still need to study his methods in detail. But Carlyle stumbled into Garrison as he summoned the succubus and an angel. Garrison died, and Carlyle accidentally wound up invested with some connection to both subjects.
None of them yet know of the angel,
Warren added.
You've got to be kidding,
Woods murmured.
Why in the hell would he do that? It's madness.
No, it's brilliant. They stood to counterbalance one another, and indeed, they seem to have done so for Carlyle. It's amazing. The relationships seem genuinely affectionate.
But the angel disappeared on him right before he was abducted,
so there may well be another faction in play. I fear Garrison may have shared his findings with another group like the Brotherhood before he died. We can't ignore this opportunity.
What should I do? Woods asked.
Spread the word. Get everyone ready to move,
Stefan said.
Perhaps immediately after Anastasia holds her formal court. Perhaps even sooner. Warren will return to Carlyle and sneak him out. I expect he'll have the easier task. The real challenge comes in extracting all of our people here without incident. We may need to fight our way out.
Woods cast a concerned gaze at Warren.
You sure you don't need help?
Mr. Woods, come now,
Warren said softly.
I'm a necromancer. Manipulating corpses is my specialty. But we have to move soon. The effects of the waters of Leith will not last forever, even in the quantities that he was given. Retrieving more will be difficult at best.
And the demons?
I hardly think Lydia or that attack dog of hers gives a damn what we mortals do in our power struggles.
Stefan scowled.
Ball even less so. The other succubus is all he wants. Lydia means to kill Carlyle herself. But I don't think Ball cares. The rest of us are beneath him. In the end, Anastasia is the real threat. Tonight will cost us, but the power we could attain here is too great to pass up. I'll be damned if I swear allegiance to that dress-wearing cadaver now.
Warren and Stefan moved off, walking swiftly to catch up to the other VIPs of the evening. Woods turned to rejoin Molly and Onyx with his pleasant expression still strong.
Ladies,
he said charmingly,
it would appear that I've been appointed as something of a herder of cats tonight. I need to spread some news among the Brotherhood. I think it would be in your best interests to stay close. This party would be dreadfully dull without someone like me to liven it up for you, wouldn't it?
His self-deprecating wink was anything but. Molly and Onyx both played along, though, smiling at him shyly.
Sure,
Onyx said.
Sorry about before, Molly said. I've just got a thing about unnecessary roughness.
Woods waved it off.
Hardly a problem. Believe me, I sympathize. My first few months with the Brotherhood were similarly jarring, but you get over it. Shall we?
As they walked, Molly looked down to see Onyx slip something off her wrist from under her sleeve. It was the small ring of vines and blonde hair used to summon and bind Rachel into the circle within their apartment. Onyx gripped it in both hands, walking closely behind Mr. Woods, with her hands low to keep them unseen. She pulled the circlet apart. A glance from Onyx asked Molly to trust her, but there was no need. Onyx never needed to ask that. Instead, Molly simply hoped that they'd survive the rest of the night. Repetition of prayer was unlikely to help, nor was variation from religion to religion. Rachel knew that, but prayed anyway. The warding circle held strong. She still couldn't see Alex. The unwelcome physical arousal ceased a short time ago, but nothing else had changed. All she could do was pray, unless her captors died or relented. Despite her frustration, they clearly had Alex's best interests at heart. She wished them no ill will. She just wanted this motherfucking warding circle to vanish for the love of God and just like that, it did. The wax, salt, and ashen circles remained, but she could feel her freedom. She didn't question the opportunity. Rachel's wings spread wide, and in a heartbeat, she shot like a ghost through the ceiling, through the apartment above it, and into the night above. For late September in Seattle, the sky was surprisingly clear. Rachel could see stars. She could see the moon. She didn't spare them any appreciation, though, because she still could not see Alex. That meant her relief was only partial. Rachel flew to his home, covering miles in seconds. As she expected, she found no clues. If anything, there was less than nothing. Everything looked perfectly in place. Rachel swore bitterly at nothing in particular and soared into the sky again. She flew up until she could see the whole of the Seattle metro area beneath her. If Alex's captors put him on a plane or sent him through some magical portal, he was long gone. That meant she still had to hope that whatever obstructed her guardian's sight would lift before it was too late. Barring those possibilities, however, there was only so far he would have been taken. Rachel hovered in the sky and watched the land below for any sign of her love. With any luck, it would be something bright, shiny, and easy to spot.
"This ought to make 'em shit their pants," Wade declared.
He looked over their collective handiwork on the vampire's SUV. The interior behind the driver's seat was absolutely soaked with oil and gasoline. Gas-soaked newspapers and other combustibles were stuffed into the back, and everything useful to the crew had been stripped from its insides.
"If we can get it close enough," Jason scowled.
"We'll get in. Only two guards at the front gate, from the looks of things. It's damn easy to get complacent when you're guarding someone else's party in what should be a quiet area."
"Anyone still not down with this?"
Drew asked.
"I'm down," Taylor put in. "But I've got a question. You aren't driving this thing in, because you've got to be ready to follow in and cover with the gun, right?"
"Yup,"
Wade nodded.
"It's got to be Jason or Drew."
"Rock, paper, scissors for it?"
Drew asked Jason. The other shrugged in consent.
Guys? Taylor broke in. "Drew hardly ever drives."
"She's got a point." Jason frowned. "Guess it's gotta be me."
"Yeah, but Jason, do you know how to drive stick?"
Jason blinked.
"Oh, no."
He groaned. His eyes darted between Drew's and Wade's. Then he covered his face in his hands.
"No, seriously, Taylor, you can't."
"No way."
Wade shook his head.
No, not doing it, girl," Drew said firmly.
"It's gotta be me, guys,"
Taylor pressed. It can't be Wade, and it can't be Drew, and Jason would break his neck anyway.
I would not.
You would, too. You've never done anything like this. And you're the only one besides Wade who's ever even handled a gun. The only two of us who can even maybe handle something like this are Drew and I, and we don't have time to get Drew used to driving this thing.
Oh, like you have done something like this before?
Jason countered.
I've got the closest skill set of anyone else here, yes, Taylor said.
I'm not calling you a wimp, Jason. I wouldn't do that. I know better. But we've got to roll with what we've got, and that means I'm the best candidate.
Wade, said Drew, this plan sucks ass all of a sudden. We need a new plan.
You got one? I'm listening.
Drew scowled, looking warily at Taylor.
It's a lot to do all in a heartbeat, and you're gonna be exposed.
I know, Taylor swallowed.
He'd do it for any of us. We wouldn't be here otherwise.
Alex doesn't know how to drive stick either,
Jason muttered bitterly.
Okay,
Drew said after a deep breath.
Okay, but I'm going in with you.
Now is not the time for changes, Mr. Warren,
Lord Blackthorn said through gritted teeth as he smiled and applauded. Lady Anastasia stood ahead of Blackthorn, at the landing of the grand staircase, graciously accepting the applause of her undead subjects and their sorceress guests. Beside the lady stood Lord Stefan, who turned ever so slightly toward her as he too applauded her. The wide, ornate stairs rose up as a single incline from the broad, open foyer of the mansion, then split both left and right at a landing above the bottom floor. Anastasia stood at the central landing, overlooking her subjects. A handful stood with her, while a handful more were on the steps going off to either side from it. All 17 members of the Brotherhood were present in the foyer below, mostly in a clutch not far from the oaken double doors leading outside.
These matters do not run on a precise schedule, Lord Blackthorn,
Warren explained.
You didn't know that you had to watch Carlyle when you were downstairs with him.
I did not expect to be roped into these formalities. Good sir, I need only your approval and someone who can open the door downstairs.
Blackthorn turned, not quite allowing himself to scowl.
Jack, take Warren here downstairs to look over Carlyle.
He glanced at the robed mage, and then back to the vampire in the pinstriped suit.
You and the other gentlemen downstairs may use your best judgment if anything unexpected should happen.
Gotcha.
Jack nodded.
Come on, Merlin.
The vampire sneered.
My people, my honored guests.
Lady Anastasia began as the applause died off.
I believe we would all agree that tonight has been a long time in coming. The unfortunate tension between us has always been a tragedy, one that I long to resolve with friendly overtures and understanding. Lord Stefan and I have worked to bring our respective peoples under a single, unified society. Others of my kind have tried this in the past in other cities and other lands, and failed. Some here naturally had their doubts. I do not hold their trepidation against them. Yet it was not until we found for ourselves a common task and a common ally that our two people could truly establish a first vital common ground. For that, we must give our thanks to our honored guests, Mistress Lydia and Lord Ball.
She gestured to one side, where Ball stood with Lydia clinging to him like an accessory. The pair accepted the applause, with only the slightest nod. To Ball's other side crouched Lorelei, still bound in chains and with one hand trapped under Ball's foot.
It is my hope that our work for our guests
will be but the first of many shared undertakings. Lady Anastasia went on, through which we will build our trust and our community. Neither demon followed the rest of her speech.
What will you do when I return to the pit?
Ball murmured to Lydia,